Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The writer and journalist Alex Kotlowitz, who has gone deep into how urban violence affects young people and shapes their lives, will be in Baltimore next week speaking at Johns Hopkins Social Determinants of Health Symposium. Kotlowitz is perhaps best known for his book, There Are No Children Here, which chronicles 2 years in the lives of two boys struggling to survive in a gritty public housing complex in Chicago. Kotlowitz has also contributed to public radio's This American Life, to the New York Times and other publications, and produced a TV documentary on violence interrupters. Alex Kotlowitz is a writer in residence at Northwestern University and joins us on the phone from his home near Chicago. Welcome.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Now, 2 decades after you wrote There Are No Children Here, you wrote again about one of those young men, Pharaoh, after he witnessed a murder. Tell us that story.
Sure. This is actually a murder that Pharaoh witnessed some 20 years ago. And I think for me, what's so startling is how that moment has so stayed with him. We were at a restaurant maybe a year ago, and we began talking about this incident. He had been in a cab going to his mom's on the west side, and as the cab pulled up, two young men yanked him out of the cab and got into the cab and attempted to rob the cab driver, and the cab driver panicked, pulled away, and he ended up getting shot and killed, and Pharaoh witnessed it all. And it has stayed with him, and we're in this restaurant, and we're talking about it, and he suddenly stands up. We're in a booth. He suddenly stands up, and it's clear he's kind of back in that moment. He crouches. His eyes are kind of darting back and forth. I had to actually sort of physically pull him back into the booth to sort of get him out of that moment. But for me, it's you know, what it said to me is that we've just completely underestimated the effect of the violence on the lives of people growing up in communities like the west side of Chicago or parts of Baltimore. These are moments that stay with people. They haunt them. They suffer the same kind of post-traumatic stress that we see in veterans returning from combat.
That kind of seems like a hot topic these days, to describe young people in violent cities as victims of trauma, symptoms like PTSD. What about that do you think we get right, and what do we get wrong?
Right. Well, I think we're just beginning to sort of acknowledge that. And I think what we're getting right about it is that, I would argue that it's one single act of violence around which the rest of a childhood will evolve. And so we see young people who, you know, have flashbacks, who get easily agitated, suffer from depression, often self-medicate, smoke a lot of weed, kids who have trouble concentrating. I think what we have to be careful about is that we not too glibly compare them to combat veterans, because there are some pretty significant differences, one of which is that there's nothing post about their trauma. I mean, for most of these young people, they're still living in the same neighborhoods in which they've experienced that violence. And so I think there's a fear that they're going to, and a likelihood that they may very well experience violence yet again in their lives. And that's important to recognize and acknowledge. But I think that we've got to figure out a way to sort of, I mean, I think we're dealing with not only people who are traumatized, but also communities that are deeply traumatized by the violence.
Explain,
I don't know whether in Baltimore you have block clubs, Sheila. Do you have, you know, communities that sort of get together and sort of have, you know, neighborhood functions? They, you know, have barbecues.
Oh,
and,
sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
We have them here in Chicago. And what's interesting, if you drive through the west or south sides of the city, you know, you see these block club signs that announce, you know, that there's a block club on this particular street. I think what's so remarkable about it is virtually all the block club signs list all the things that are prohibited on the block. No gangbanging, no drug dealing, no card playing, no loud music. And it's as if these block clubs, which should be this moment to celebrate, are yet is this moment in which these people are just talking about all the things that they fear. And it's, you've got these communities that are kind of reeling, that are back on their heels. that I think are just deeply traumatized as a result of the violence.
Well, one of the points that you seemed to make when you were describing Pharaoh's reaction to having been so close to that murder was that you said the next day he went shopping and you were kind of amazed that he could be
casual
about what he'd seen, and then you realized it wasn't casual at all.
Right. I was actually even angry about it. I just thought, how can, you know, if it was me, I always think I'd be curled up on my couch, you know, in a fetal position. And I thought, how can you be so heartless that you're out shopping the next day? He was headed off to college in a couple of weeks. And, of course, for him, it was the only way he could possibly move on. It was this kind of denial that, understandably, takes place.
We talk about affluent suburban women doing retail therapy when they're a little down in the dumps. He was basically doing a bit of retail therapy for himself.
Right. I guess that's, I suppose, one way to look at it. Right. I mean, he was just simply finding a way to compartmentalize what had taken place. And so he was trying to put some distance between what had happened that day before, but of course wasn't in the end successful at doing that.
And we've been talking so far about the trauma of witnessing violence, but you've also written very movingly about the long-term impacts of losing someone to the streets.
Right. The numbers in my city, and I suspect in Baltimore, are just absolutely staggering. You know, in the past 25 years in Chicago, there have been over 16,000 people killed. And that's in a reasonably concentrated part of the city, and another 60,000 people who have been wounded by gunfire. I mean, the numbers are just, I mean, they're unbelievable. And it's virtually impossible to grow up in these communities and not have lost family member or a friend or a neighbor to the violence. And there is, you know, people, you know, for me, it's just, I have trouble getting my arms around what it would mean to lose a child. One of the phenomena you have here in Chicago, for example, are mothers who have lost children who end up forming these kind of support groups, and it ends up being their community, the only people who they feel can possibly understand what they've been through.
That's author and journalist Alex Kotlowitz, author of There Are No Children Here. Here on The Record on WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. He's speaking Monday at the Johns Hopkins Urban Health Institute Symposium on the Social Determinants of Health. So on Monday, your assigned topic is Growing Up Poor, the Myths and Realities. What myths do you intend to point out?
Well, I think one of the myths are what we've just been talking about, is I do think there's this notion that young people get hardened and numb by the violence. And again, I would argue that violence really gets in their bones. I think there's a myth that people decide that they want to live amongst their own, and why our cities are so deeply segregated. And of course, it neglects the history in places like Baltimore and Chicago, where blacks were, you know, restricted from living in parts of the city and had a real difficulty in getting loans from the FHA, and so were unable to build up housing equity. So to recognize that there's a history to that segregation. I think there's a myth about the no-snitch culture, this idea that people in our inner cities choose not to cooperate with the police because of this kind of compact they've made with each other, when in fact I think much of what's going on is really this unwillingness to cooperate out of fear, that the police are unable to offer this protection to people who are in these communities, who are asked to testify against neighbors, sometimes against family, sometimes against friends. And the other part of it in my city in Chicago, and I don't know whether this is the case in Baltimore, but there's also a fear that if they testify that nothing will get done. The closure rates in violent crimes in Chicago are just staggeringly low. Roughly, 28% of all homicides people are charged, and in shootings in which people are wounded by gunfire, it's 10%, which means you got a pretty good chance of getting away with shooting somebody.
Pretty good chance of getting away with murder. The overall themes of Monday's symposium is Baltimore's youth, reducing vulnerability to improve our future. How do we make kids less vulnerable?
Well, I think there's so much we can do, and I've got to tell you that, so I wrote There Are No Children Here 25 years ago, and for me, one of the things that's so sobering is how resonant the story of those two boys feels.
I was planning to raise that, yeah.
I had an experience where I showed our documentary, The Interrupters, at a prison in central Illinois, and was to roughly 200 people. It's the only screening I've done where we had to leave the lights on. It was a regulation at the prison. But what was so remarkable about it is afterwards I took questions, and the first two people who got up were two men who had served 18 and 20 years respectively, and they were near tears. And the reason was that they had grown up in Englewood, which was the community featured in the film, and they couldn't believe how much worse it looked from the time that they'd gone in a couple of decades earlier. These are communities that we've completely neglected, and we've got to find a way to invest in them again. I mean, there's all the obvious, which is these are communities in which work has virtually disappeared. There aren't jobs for individuals. These are communities in which the schools are not functioning as they should. These are communities in which there's either inadequate policing or in which the police has sort of taken on an oppositional role. So we need to find a way to fortify community, which includes housing, education, healthcare, policing, all the things that seem so self-evident, and yet we've done so little.
Let me pick up particularly on violence intervention. Baltimore's health department runs a violence interruption effort called Safe Streets. And ex-offenders have had a big impact deterring homicides in the areas where they work. How confident are you in violence interruption programs?
Right. Well, I think one of the things I really admire about Baltimore is one of the few cities that, or one of the first cities that really viewed violence as a public health problem. And so one of the things that they've done is this Safe Streets program. And I think this kind of street-level intervention is something that, I've seen work firsthand. It was what we were filming when we did The Interrupters.
But the documentary.
It's only a part of the solution. It's not by any means the kind of, and I apologize for the metaphor, it's not by any means the magic bullet. But this acknowledgement that violence is a public health matter, I think, is really essential, that it's not solely a police problem or a problem of punishment, of sending people away to prison for longer sentences, that we've got to recognize that there's much more at work and there are other ways to approach it. I mean, for example, here in Chicago, we've got this mentoring program, Becoming a Man, that sort of inspired President Obama to encourage mentoring programs across the country. There are, I think, is effort to put more social workers in our schools, which seems so essential in dealing with the trauma that these kids have reckoned with. And there are programs, there's a program in Philadelphia that takes young men who have been shot and gets them into counseling right away. There's a program here in Chicago that has war veterans working with young gang members and both mentoring them and trying to sort of get them to understand the trauma that they've experienced.
Before I let you go, let me ask you about a phrase in one of your essays. You wrote about the danger of the single story. And when I saw that phrase, I first took it as a warning to journalists because we're so infatuated with making our news stories come alive with anecdotes so that our listeners and readers meet real people. And it's easy to let those stories overwhelm the trends and the statistics and the sort of the hard news of it. But then you pointed out the single story can be a danger to people in the community. How so?
Well, first of all, I want to just sort of acknowledge or tip my hat that this is a notion that I've kind of borrowed from the novelist Chimamanda Adichie, who talks very eloquently about the danger of the single story. But, you know, what I mean by that is this notion that when we go into places that feel unfamiliar, that we recognize and acknowledge that somebody growing up next door to each other may have a very different narrative, that their narrative is not somehow predetermined by who they are or where they live or the circumstances under which they're growing up, that people's stories are very particular to who they are. And we tend sometimes, I think, to sort of group people and make all these assumptions about people just because of where they live, because of race, because of class, because of gender. I could go on. And so for me, it's a constant reminder as a storyteller, as a nonfiction storyteller, is that danger of the single narrative. And sometimes when we think we know somebody's story is that, in fact, we know very little. And I think that's really essential.
I appreciate your talking to us. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Sheila. Thanks for having me.
Alex Kotlowitz is writer-in-residence and senior lecturer at Northwestern University. He's the author of three books, including There Are No Children Here. On Monday, he'll be one of the keynote speakers at the Johns Hopkins Urban Health Institute's annual symposium on social determinants of health. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we've got a link to more information and how to register if you'd like to attend. I'm Sheila Cast. Quick break now on the record, and when we're back, a Stoop story. Stick with us.